Good morning. Today I'm going to be talking to you guys about barriers to STD screening for HIV-infected men who have sex with men from a healthcare provider perspective. The CDC and the Infectious Disease Society have in place STD screening guidelines for sexually active HIV-infected men who have sex with men. The guidelines recommend routine testing at least annually for syphilis, chlamydia, and gonorrhea at the appropriate anatomic sites. The guidelines also recommend routine patient counseling and STD education. Now, what's the importance of screening for STDs among HIV-infected MSM? STDs increase the risk of HIV transmission from these men to their sexual partners. There's also an increased risk of STD acquisition because of ongoing high-risk behavior. And most of these patients are asymptomatic for STDs, hence the significance of doing the appropriate STD screening. This graph here comes from another study that was done with the 8 clinics included in our study, which illustrates the proportion of HIV-infected MSM screened for syphilis. As you can see, the percentage of screening for syphilis is pretty high across the clinics. However, when looking at the screening for chlamydia, it goes down drastically. Just looking at the anatomic sites for urethral, they're pretty low, and they're also low for the rectal sites. This finding was also consistent or similar for gonorrhea. As you can see across the board, the screening is also low for these men. So, based on the findings from that study, we were interested in understanding the barriers encountered by healthcare providers in adherence to the STD screening guidelines for HIV-infected MSM, and also to inform the development of interventions to increase STD screening. So how do we go about doing this? Well, we did a qualitative study where we interviewed providers, and that was one component of the larger evaluation of the STD screening of asymptomatic HIV-infected MSM receiving care in 8 HIV clinics in 6 U.S. cities. 40 healthcare providers were randomly selected from the larger pool of that sample of the evaluation study. The interviews investigated barriers to sexual risk assessment, STD screening practices of the healthcare providers, and barriers to screening that these healthcare providers encountered. All qualitative analysis was performed using Invivo 8 to organize and determine the emerging themes. This table here gives an overview of the demographic characteristics of the providers. If we're looking at the provider's sexual identity, you can see that there's about a 40-60 ratio in regards to gay, lesbian, bisexual healthcare providers to heterosexual providers. This next table demonstrates the clinical characteristics of the providers. There was little more than half of the physicians were healthcare providers. The other providers included nurses, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and health educators. So what did we find? Based on the findings and the emerging themes, we found that syphilis screening was routine across the board in the clinics from these healthcare providers. However, there were inconsistencies in screening for chlamydia and gonorrhea. And some of the barriers that these healthcare providers encountered were due to discomfort taking a sexual history, time constraints, patient confidentiality concerns, and cultural and language barriers. I'll go into more detail now with these findings and themes. In regards to the screening for syphilis, as I mentioned, the providers indicated that they do routine syphilis screening. A physician from Los Angeles shared with us, for syphilis, we do it automatically. It's in the blood, so it's not a problem. A nurse practitioner in New York shared, we have a success rate currently of screening 92% of our MSM, at least annual, for asymptomatic syphilis. Now, in regards to the screening for gonorrhea and chlamydia, the screening varied across the clinics. For instance, a physician from San Francisco shared, we found a very high prevalence in the order of 6 to 8% of asymptomatic either rectal or pharyngeal gonorrhea or chlamydia. Wow, we just missed it on the urine screen. So it became our policy then to screen with just those swabs rather than the urine. On the contrary, a nurse practitioner in New York shared, I'm not going to be focused in that visit on screening or assessment for STDs. In that visit, I'm going to be much more focused on treating the clinical presentation of this critical illness first. So even with this last example, you can also see how time constraints also serve as a barrier to doing the appropriate screening for these men. Now, in regards to sexual history, we found that HIV and health education counselors were more comfortable taking a sexual history than clinical providers. A physician in Atlanta shared with us, I've heard people say, are you the top or bottom guy? That just sounds tacky to me. I don't know. Some things I get a little uncomfortable with. However, an HIV counselor in New York shared, MDs have a different type of training. I don't think they're as skilled. Do you give patients that sense of being competent and non-judgmental? I think that there are some that just won't ever get it. And even if they are trained, I think they just come across as insincere. So here's a great contrast that shows the difference in the comfort of taking sexual history from health educators versus physicians. In regards to the patient confidentiality, there were concerns from patients just regarding their confidentiality when they go into the clinics, and so that served as a barrier as well. A medical assistant in Chicago shared, if they really believe that what they say is confidential, they'll divulge a lot more information. Some people just don't trust the system, so they don't tell us, and we won't get an accurate history. HIV counselor in New York went on to say, others are offended and feel that it's an intrusion into their privacy, and that, yes, it's not unethical, but just really shouldn't be anybody's business but their own and what they do. In terms of the cultural and barriers these healthcare providers encounter, we found that the providers' race and ethnicity, language abilities, and sexual identity were barriers to STD screening. An HIV counselor in Los Angeles shared, with the Asians and the African Americans, we still get that stigma, this taboo like, why should I tell you? Can you just do the test? A nurse from Chicago shared, we have a lot of Spanish-speaking patients, for example, so it's hard sometimes even to communicate. It can definitely be a barrier with the patients. And a physician assistant in Miami shared, if they come in my office and they see a picture of me with my wife and my four kids, they might be less inclined to tell me of all the things that they do with their friends because they're afraid of what I might think. So here we see examples of how each of these race, ethnicity, language, and sexual identity can serve as barriers to doing screening. Some of the limitations that we encountered with this study were obviously recall bias from the healthcare providers and interview consistency. There was some variation in the style of interviewing of the people who did the interviews for this study, so we note that as a limitation. So what can we conclude now based on these findings? Well, the providers report that they're following the guidelines for syphilis and that they're also experiencing barriers for screening routinely for chlamydia and gonorrhea, which were due to a discomfort taking sexual history, the cultural differences such as race and ethnicity and sexual identity, language barriers, and time constraints. We also can conclude that provider-focused interventions may help reduce some of those barriers to STD screening. Now, what might some of those interventions look like? Well, development of culturally appropriate sexual history tools is one avenue that we can take. There's actually a useful tool available now at this website that was developed by our partners, I believe in the California Department of Public Health. Providing diversity training for providers can also address this issue, especially around race, ethnicity, language, and sexual identity. And the implementation of reimbursement policies for STD risk assessment and counseling can also help address this issue since there are no such policies in place right now. And of course, reinforcement of the CDC and IDSA guidelines. But with the development of interventions, we have to be mindful that these interventions must be simple, affordable, and sustainable. I would like to thank the collaborative effort of my partners at the Division of STD Prevention at the CDC, and thank you.
That was very nice, Carter. Thank you. Do we have any questions from the audience back here?
Well, there were 40 people in all, and how many were from each clinic varied. There were probably on average about 6 people from each clinic, and the clinics were selected based on Ryan White funding.
Question over here.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to ask because I didn't do the interviews. I'm sorry.
That's a great question, because presumably if people have had that intervention, they would be more likely to not have so many barriers. I mean, that's the objective of ask and then screen and intervene. Knowing your results, could you think of what kind of an intervention that you would design to change these barriers?
Wow. That's a very good question. Well, it's something, I think one of the major things is something that really speaks to the issues around race and ethnicity. For this study, there was an underrepresentation of racial ethnic groups as far as the providers were concerned. And so I think that if you can develop an intervention that really speaks to that, then that would certainly be an avenue of addressing these issues. With the one example that I provided with the Asians and the African Americans, you know, if there's some diversity training that's more centered and focused around these racial ethnic minority groups, then I think that can certainly tap into being able to develop that dialogue mm-hmm. and get over these issues with having comfort getting that information from the patients.
Any other questions? Thank you, Jarvis, very much.